Welcome to Retrospect. I'm Morgan Johnson. On Tuesday this past week, February 27th, University President Tanya Tetlow sat down with members of Fordham's student media organizations. It was her semesterly press conference, and it was a wide-ranging conversation. Colby McCaskill, one of our assistant features editors, is here with me today. Hey, Colby.
Hey, Morgan. Thanks for having me.
Of course. So you were in the room for this press conference?
That's right. Our editor-in-chief, Miriam Bashara, and Sam Bracey from the news desk conducted the interview alongside members of the Fordham Ram. Miriam has already written a great story in our latest print edition. Go read that too. That'll be link number one down in the description. But yeah, I was there listening and capturing photos.
Great. So tell us everything. What did she say? What didn't she say? Lay it out for us.
Sure. Yeah, so I'm going to give you as much of the conference as I can while still keeping it dense and snappy. The topics we covered were kind of all over the place, so I'll be grouping similar topics together. And also, there will be time codes down below, so you can skip easily from the topics you want to hear. With that out of the way, here we go.
All right, well, thank you for coming and coming together, and I'm just happy to spend more time with you and answer all of your questions. And
so, the Fordham Ram floated the first question, asking, essentially, what were her goals for the future of Fordham? And to this, she said basically that she wants us, all of us,
to focus on how Fordham can have the most impact on the world.
Part of that, she said, is chasing impact, not status. From this, she pivoted, saying the funding that helps us have the most impact is this new EPA grant.
Oh yeah, this new EPA grant. We just published a story on this. It's a $50 million grant. For those of you interested in reading up on this, that'll be link number two down in the description.
Perfect. Yeah. For those who don't know, Tanya has you covered. She explained how Fordham is going to be using those $50 million.
40 of the $50 million we are to pass through in grants to the two community groups. So they have to compete for those grants. And we have rules from the EPA about how to administer that.
The other 10, she said,
we get to keep for our own, the staffing it will take to give out this money, because that's actually a lot of hard work, but also our own faculty research.
And the great part about this grant, the president said, is that it really tackles an issue that matters to the Catholic Church, that matters to Gen Z. And it's really an issue of
waking up to the dangers of climate change. So I love it because it's not, it's bottom up. It's not just sort of us as faculty trying to find the answers. It's doing it in partnership with the community.
That $40 million is going to be given out when Fordham begins receiving and approving grant proposals. She couldn't give us any specifics yet. The grant application process has yet to be set up.
Okay, so what's next?
Next, Miriam, editor-in-chief, posed a question she had asked at the last press conference this past November. What is the most pressing issue for Fordham? Tanya was straight up. She had a lot.
I can't tell you how many things keep me up at night, so it's hard to really rank them. You know, our worst nightmare, which was losing a student last week.
The student she's referring to is Luke Santos, who was 20 when he passed away last Tuesday, February 20th. You can read more about him in an obituary written by the university, which is link number three down in the description. She's thinking about other things too, she said. She mentioned that
our costs have gone up.
Last April, the university raised the tuition price by 6%. So that's two semesters ago.
Yes, and for a little more context, she also spoke about trying to temper future tuition prices last semester during the student press conference. Those two stories will be linked down below, 4 and 5 respectively.
So she said this has been an important issue because it's become apparent
that if they keep going up, we're just hitting the ceiling of what the average American family can afford to pay. We work to control our costs, to find other sources of revenue, but we also really need for the federal government to understand what an incredible investment you are.
One of the specific things she mentioned that she wants the federal government to understand is,
and what it means to have Pell Grants, for example, really keep up with what education actually costs.
So when they were first introduced, she told us Pell Grants were enough to cover tuition, room, and board at most schools. This just simply isn't the case now. Now, the cost is placed upon the student.
This sounds like the beginning of an announcement.
Well, you're kind of right. Tuition will be increasing.
By how much?
I think we're about to announce that, so we'll do that ourselves through an email rather than through you guys.
But oh, seriously, by how much?
It will be a lower increase in tuition than before. But
she said the full announcement with all the details will be coming in
March. Mid-March. Okay, yeah. So a couple weeks.
So be on the lookout for that.
I definitely will. Okay, Colby, one of the other university topics we've seen a lot about in the news has been a delay in FAFSA. Did she touch on that?
Yes, she did. That was actually the exact next topic. It's kind of weird that you knew that.
Let's just say I'm a magician and I can read the future. Actually, the past. This happened in the past. I wasn't there.
So FAFSA, which is the free application for federal student aid, is getting a revamp. And unfortunately, because of delays, many colleges and universities are having to delay their own aid package calculations too. She called the delays
a real tragedy,
but also explained that they pivoted to an alternative form so that they can give tentative aid packages. Once the actual FAFSAs come through, they'll be able to confirm those. Another big university issue happening around the country is the conversation over affirmative action. So Tanya says that Fordham is
working hard to comply with the Supreme Court's ruling,
and at the same time is trying to bring in a class
where students are as diverse as your generation is diverse.
Part of that strategy, she says, is recruiting from diverse sources. But that's also some other colleges' strategy, too. So a little friction there.
We've always fished in very diverse ponds, but we have more competition in those ponds now. So we will not find out how well we've done until we have finished recruiting the class, and then we will be able to receive the data of how we landed.
Going with this national university news theme, Miriam asked about standardized testing. As Miriam said, the New York Times just ran a piece,
link number 6 down below,
about Yale and its decision to return to testing requirements. How is Fordham treating the issue, went the question. And here's what the president said in return.
So we are continuing to be test optional.
She made a point to note that that could change, but right now the answer is that
it's really that we continue to be test optional. We have no plans to go back to testing in the immediate future. We believe strongly that high school GPA and a holistic application review are a better predictor of success.
So at this point, Tanya fielded a question about the recent news surrounding a stalled policy change pertaining to allowing opposite-gendered overnight guests. The Ram wrote a piece about this that ran in January, I think. That's link number 7 if you want to check it out.
Also, the opinion section ran a piece on that as well, so check out link number 8 in the description.
Yeah, and to this topic, Tanya says that
we remain entirely open to a change, and we wanted the help of student leaders to think through what would work best.
Really? She alluded? If the point of this policy is to prevent sex in dormitories by restricting opposite gender overnight guests?
Then being gender specific doesn't achieve that, right? It's under-inclusive and over-inclusive.
And so, she said, it's going to be a conversation for student leadership about how you create
rules and guidelines and cultural expectations among students about access to their room and privacy and all of those things.
Next, we turn to the university's population, which is growing. This one was asked by the staff at the RAM, what is Fordham going to do about it? The president said that they were definitely going to give us some thoughts.
We are really thinking through now what the optimal class size is.
This is a complicated issue, and it's good to remember
that if we have more students, we need more faculty, we need more student affairs staff, we need to make sure we have enough physical space for you all, from housing to dining, to libraries and gyms and recreation and all the rest of it.
So there are plans to repurpose some of the vacant buildings Fordham owns, yes, in the Bronx.
But they are very long-term plans.
One of her goals in this area, she said,
although it will take years to raise the money, is a science building.
STEM is an area that she wants to catch up in, she said. So in the meantime,
we are renovating some of the existing science classrooms and labs at Rose Hill now, right?
We pivoted again, this time toward food, specifically the new cafeteria at Rose Hill.
Yep, we published an article about that last semester.
We did. That will be link number 9. She said that project is on track.
And I'm excited about that. Having spent most of my life in New Orleans, I take food very seriously. I know that we have work to do in the quality of food at Fordham.
She also stressed that we, as students, can play a role in that too.
We do need your help to tell us specifically where Aramark needs to up its game.
If you wanted presidential recommendations on food spots, this is the podcast for you.
Really? Where does she eat?
Well,
I love Rosa Mexicana.
I love Enzo's.
I'm not a fan of white pizza, but theirs is just miraculous.
I love Johnson Barbecue, which is a little farther south in the Bronx.
And last but not least,
Popeye's closest to campus at the Bronx is very good.
I want to make a note for the record. There was a lot of nodding and agreement in the room on that last one. I also want to make another note for the record. There was a lot of nodding and disagreement in this room while we were recording.
Damn, we're covering a lot.
And still more to go. Next up, the president touched on the impact of the proposed congestion pricing plan. It's a potential policy change for New York City that would charge vehicles to be anywhere below 60th Street in Manhattan. Tanya said that she is
very sympathetic to the goals.
And at the same time, is unsure of exactly how it would impact the Lincoln Center campus.
Because the worry is that it creates a lot of traffic leading up to the boundary. And
for the Ram vans, the change might look like a different drop-off and pickup spot.
We can adjust their route so they let off before the boundary. They probably won't be able to turn the corner at 60th Street anymore without racking up huge fees.
The next part was a big part of the conversation, and so I want to call out this portion of the episode. Hey, if you've tuned out, that's okay. Come back at least for this part. At this point, the conversation turned to the national conversations concerning free speech on college campuses, but she also fielded questions about Fordham-specific issues, such as the Students for Justice in Palestine organization, which has not been recognized as an official club on campus. And, just we'll say, you'll hear the audio drop a little bit. That was me learning a valuable lesson about the capacity of 2 gigabyte SD cards.
Also, The Observer has been keeping track of this story. The most recent one we've published was written by Sam, who was also at the press conference. That's link number 10 down below.
The president said that in the classroom, it's not so much a question of free speech, but academic freedom. In her words, we need
the kind of freedom enough to allow learning to happen, right? That we're not going to debate fundamental facts, but we are going to debate the heck out of opinions and what's contested and what we can learn at those moments.
Concerning the recent protests for Palestine at Fordham and similar events around the city, here's how she framed it.
You know, we have folks who are saying various slogans around Gaza that they don't actually know what it means.
Sam actually asked for clarification later on, and she dodged that one. Here's that exchange.
Just to clarify something quickly, you said slogans around Gaza that people have been saying that they don't know what they mean. Can you clarify what you meant by that or what slogans you had in mind?
I think I'd rather not get into specific examples because that's fraught.
I understand.
Yeah.
The president expressed a hope that our university could be the opposite of what she called social media land, which she described as toxic discourse filled with insults rather than arguments.
And that I hope that Fordham's secret weapon in that is the Jesuit superpower of discernment. The skills of discernment, which go back 500 years, are the opposite of social media. They're about assuming good intentions. They're about being open and curious, about trying to really listen to the other side of the argument before you get defensive and can't hear it. That it's about taking the time to make important decisions without jumping to conclusions, right? So literally the opposite of what the world does right now. I think we all, students included, need to think really proactively about how do we make this a place of passionate debate of issues that doesn't devolve into toxic nonsense.
Commenting on the way this conversation has played out nationally, she said this.
There have been a lot of articles written that lately that university presidencies are the hardest job in America. So I don't know whether to feel proud of myself or self-pity. But these were already very complicated jobs. And I think, you know, it's very hard to navigate complexity and treacherous ground without misstepping sometimes, as some of my colleagues have done. But the sort of immediacy of consequences to that has felt in some ways, I wonder about how much of this is about making higher ed a very useful political football right now. There's a liberating aspect to the fact that whatever you do, someone's going to be mad at you. I just try to hunker down and focus on doing what is right.
She also said that she hasn't had any conversations with students about these issues this semester, though she said that she would be happy to.
I am so eager to console the students who are in a great deal of pain, who are most affected by this war, and conscious of my own powerlessness to have the right words to do that. And I think that for the students, they feel so powerless right now. They want to make a difference. They want to make it better. And they are eager for me to do that, to help them in that work. And I find myself in the embarrassing situation of revealing to them I have less power than they imagine that I do. That no one's waiting on my foreign policy statements. No one's really going to be persuaded by anything I could say to change what's happening over there. But that falls really flat to students who are terrified for loved ones. So it's a very hard moment.
As a final word on the subject, she expressed her pride for students who make their voices heard, a sentiment she shared during the press conference in November as well.
I am proud of the students who are passionate and speak out. That's what we teach too. That is part of our Jesuit mission.
On a different note, the New York Times recently published a profile on the president. It was pretty insightful.
If you want to read it, that will be link number 11 down below.
Yeah, so Editor-in-Chief Miriam asked some follow-up questions, particularly about which previous case of hers had the most impact.
Well, the case that sticks out most is the one they already described in the article, but about where I had someone I suspected might be innocent, even though he had confessed.
She said it was a really meaningful experience to have her intuition prove correct and her hesitancy validated. In a job like that, regrets abound, but thankfully this wasn't one of those times.
The article didn't talk about this, but for 10 years I ran a clinic on domestic violence and represented clients in family court and just understood how thoroughly the odds were stacked against them. I used to read the paper every morning and check first and foremost to see whether any of my clients have been murdered.
For Fordham, now, she wants to instill,
I hope, a sense of wanting not just to function in broken systems, but wanting to fix systems and take the time and trouble to make them better.
On a different note, Sam asked a question about grade inflation, then kept her honest.
I asked this question recently, and I'm pretty sure we can confirm it for you, but that the range of GPAs at Fordham has not shifted. So we'll check on that.
I can't speak to that, actually. It's up half a point over 10 years.
Okay.
So not, you know.
So very gradually huge, over time, but where
The pandemic disrupted that slightly.
Yeah.
That's according to a grade inflation report that was produced by Fordham IT.
Okay,
so not grade inflation, grade analysis report.
In response, she said that.
So we're all in this kind of arms race of trying to make sure that we don't dilute the quality of your assessment, right? But there aren't easy answers for that.
What are the next questions pertain to recent talk about possibly changing Fordham's core curriculum? There are differing opinions on the subject, but according to the president.
So there is a process underway. The core curriculum is very much owned by the faculty. So they have asked me what I thought, but then they will decide. It's one thing to have very pragmatic skills like accounting, but what's much harder to teach on the job is critical thinking, ethics and integrity, the ability to write and communicate and present verbally, all of those things. But I hear all the time from people who are in business or technology or science, how much that philosophy or theology course matter to them. I hear that all the time.
Shifting topics, she also touched on the state of her dog, Archie.
Ooh, will Archie be coming to campus soon? Specifically Elsie.
That was the question. You're right on the money. She said she's working on
Yes, I need to do that soon. I've got to remind myself to get him here. Yes.
Also, apparently, last time, He visited Murray Weigel Hall,
the senior center for the Jesuits, and he was hugely popular there, so I need to get him back in there too. I was surprised that they let him in, but they were happy to have him.
Oh, that's great. This all needs to happen. I just have one big question that I absolutely need to ask.
Go for it.
Who is going to be the graduation speaker this year?
You don't miss, do you? Well, the president is...
working on that, right. It's both, you know, you try to pick the right person who will be appealing in all the right ways, and then you have to wait for them to answer you, which is painful. So we have an invite out now, and fingers crossed. But boy, did I ratchet things up last year, so it's set the bar high for myself. I know. I'll do my best.
One of the other things you ought to know about President Tetlow is that she is a mother of an unusually insightful child. Apparently, this cracked her up. Her 11-year-old daughter recently helped her through a work conflict by saying the following.
So, Mommy, you're going to have to use your trash can tool, meaning just to throw it away, stop worrying about it. And you may have to use your forgiveness tool, even if he doesn't use his sorry tool. Well, that is profound. Thank you, Lucy. And there was another moment where she told me, you need to tell the person that you're in a fight with, you're right. And the following, and said, how did you learn that? She said, I Googled how to win an argument.
Miriam, at this point, floated the idea of her daughter being the commencement speaker. Tanya was quick to say that.
She really would be good. Yes.
We're going from topic to topic a lot here, but that's basically how it went in the conference itself. She fielded questions about what it meant to be the first layperson as president of the university and how she thought about the traditional Jesuit values and their value in this secularizing world.
So I think of Jesuit values as, frankly, still radical in the world. They are not traditional. And including the kind of inclusion that means you can feel like you can be your full self here, that you don't have to hide your religion if you are religious, that it's not meant to be a hobby to be hidden away and made to feel embarrassed about. And also a place of welcome to those who come to their values from other perspectives in faith. And so doing that without diluting who we are is sometimes tricky. But I think right now what's most countercultural about us is to be a place where it's okay to be religious and no one will make fun of you for that, right? And that really matters, and that's gotten harder in the world.
I have to add that at this point, the Zoom call that was up on the opposite side of the room, the way the administration was recording the press conference, suddenly had a new participant.
Ooh, who was it?
Someone who jumped on the line. I don't know who Josie is.
It was this random lady named Josie.
Must be a framing call to jump into.
I'm supposed to be at a 3 o'clock meeting. A 4 o'clock meeting. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, it's all right. Can you?
Oh, God, I'm so embarrassed. All right, I'm going to
get out. Okay. Hello, Josie.
Okay, anyway, back to Jesuit values.
And I do think that church doctrine does not neatly align with either political party. It doesn't align with the divisions of American politics.
In the values that she's thinking of, a united stance towards the common good, caring for the poor, a sense of interconnectedness.
At this moment, I feel like that would be the cure for so much of what ails this country. But right now, we're tilting heavily towards individualism in a way that's ripping us apart.
We did hit on the recent Fulbright scholarship announcement.
And with that, you mean the recent announcement by the U.S. Department of State that Fordham is the top producer of Fulbright scholars.
Where'd you hear about that?
In that article by The Ram.
Whoa, that must be link number 12.
Well, it was a real focus for Father McShane to do more and more to help students get the opportunity to get those fellowships and prestigious awards. That's something I believe in, too. It brings glory to Fordham, but more importantly, it really launches the lives of our students. I got a Truman Fellowship, and it made all the difference in my life in so many ways. It just raised my ambitions. It helped support me through graduate school. It was great. It is among my priorities to see how we can be ever more global and outward facing.
We're almost done. Thanks for staying with us. But at the very end, she did comment about the ongoing negotiations between the administration and the graduate student workers, who unionized in April 2022, as well as the RAs.
Link number 13 for those interested.
Well, we are keeping a web page that has very matter-of-fact summaries of each negotiation session, so you can look at that.
And just a quick note, we want to remind the listener that the summaries she's talking about, like every answer she's giving, are from the perspective of the university. Just keep that in mind if you check them out. Link 14.
I think it gives you a sense of, particularly in the graduate school negotiations, how long we've been at the table and how hard we are trying.
Right.
We're making progress in both. So we try to balance very much wanting to do right by everyone who works here, including students who work for us part-time, and also balancing the fact that, you know, it's you, the undergraduates, who pay those graduate students their full scholarships and their stipends for teaching and research. And so right now we pay them as much or more than we would pay a part-time adjunct who has a lot more experience, because we're giving our graduate students the chance to learn how to teach. But to ask you, the undergraduates, to pay them, you know, a multiple of what you would pay another more experienced instructor is something that we have to really think through as an ethical issue.
She did say that Fordham is
so grateful for the work that RAs do and the ways that the ability for you to teach and be peer mentors and support our students is profoundly higher because you are not that much older than the students that you are helping.
And that
the VP for Student Affairs was telling me how proud she is of our students at the table, of how passionate and productive and persuasive they have been.
And with that, including another drop-in from an early attendee.
Patty, we need a minute. You're on too early. Thank you.
That was it.
All right. It looks like there's probably a group of people waiting to get into this room from all the jumping on. Thank you guys so much. That was really fun, and I'm very proud of you. Thank you so much.
Cool. Thank you, Colby, for joining us and telling us all we need to know about the press conference and all the important bits. And thank you for everybody for listening. That concludes Retrospect. Thanks for being here, Colby, and see you guys next time on Retrospect.